Collar is here. Purple Insider, the topic. What's going on with the Vikings? Nobody better than Collar on the topic. Hello, sir. Good to chat, as always. Help me out understand on Christian Darrisaw. Obviously, spectacular player, significant injury. You're out there every day. I'm just reading your stuff and other stuff and observing what's going on. It seems like he was making excellent progress. He was a part of practices in training camp. And then he doesn't play in the first two games. Then, what, Wednesday practices, Thursday doesn't practice. Did he practice today? Do we know that yet?
Yeah, he's practicing in full today. And we're going to hear from Kevin O'Connell shortly. I'm actually headed out there right now. I think it's still going to be up in the air. My guess is that O'Connell's going to tell us that he'll be questionable and that they haven't decided yet or something. We went through the same thing with TJ Hockenson last year, if you remember, where it was like, he's practicing. Is he going to play? When's he going to play? Is he going to play? And I think that with this team, they just have always leaned toward with these injuries for significant players. And the same thing goes for the way they handled Justin Jefferson. When's he going to practice? Is he going to be back out there? All summer long, it felt like we were going through that. And they have just played it safe with a lot of guys over the last couple of years, which I think is smart, but it's also really hard when you're watching Justin School. Now, if Darrisaw doesn't play, it's going to have to be one of the best pass rushers in the NFL versus a fifth rounder from last year who has 14 career snaps at left tackle. And that doesn't feel very good. I mean, I tweeted out a stat earlier about Darrisaw, and just the benefit of having him at left tackle is hard to even describe. It means so much to this team. But you can't force these things. Like, the guy's going to be ready when he's going to be ready, and it would be really hard if he's not 100% fully ready to go and play 60 snaps out there to face Trey Hendrickson, who had 17 and a half sacks last year. So I think it's very easy to be impatient, but also you want this guy not just for 17 games. You want him for 70 more games as a Minnesota Viking.
Do you believe he suffered a relapse in any way, or it's just kind of what you said, that this is an arduous battle? They're going to err on the side of caution. They want him out there for the next 8 years, and so they kind of had this plan all along.
Yeah, I think this probably was the plan all along, but what Kevin O'Connell has not wanted to do, and I'm sure that players appreciate this, it's one of those little things that O'Connell does that I think players like, is that, he didn't put a timeline on Christian Darrisaw for us. He didn't say, oh yeah, guys, looks good for week one, to try to push the player out there a little faster. I'm not saying that I ever covered a coach previously who might have done that from time to time, but the fact that O'Connell doesn't do it, but it also leaves us in the dark a little bit more, because when he first gets out there to practice in mini camp and then practices throughout the summer, you're like, well, what's your deal, bro? Get back there and play. This is also one of the most stressful positions in all of sports. I think it doesn't get enough credit for that, considering the beast that you play against. And, I think when we see Darrisaw still with the giant brace on his leg, I don't know if there was a relapse or a reset of any kind. I know that these things don't just get a little bit better every day. It's not like having a cut that just is going to heal a little bit more each day. So there might have been some ups and downs to this, which would be very normal. But I think that Darrisaw himself, you got to remember, he's got to be ready to play a full game. Not just, hey, does he get out there and practice, but in the physical shape to go handle that as well, which is a major challenge.
Yeah, and as you said, Hendrickson is, what, one of the five best defensive ends in football. That'd be a heck of a way to return. Okay, let's talk about other injuries. I was thinking about this in preparing for our conversation here right now. I don't think we can undersell what it's like to lose these three players on defense. Harrison Smith, Van Ginkle, and Cashman. I mean, those are three vitally important players, and all three weren't out there Sunday night when Bijan Robinson was Bijan Robinson. He's a spectacular player. But you want to talk about three guys you want out there tackling him? Those are three of your top five or six guys in defense you want pursuing him.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And, I think everyone watching the game knows kind of what happened there. Like, they got run over at times in the game. But also, when you enter the fourth quarter with 12 points on the board for the other team, you really feel like you should win that football game. And I think that there was a lot of guys that had to just kind of grit it out in that game and take a lot of snaps that maybe you wouldn't have wanted them to. I mean, they were throwing out there like Elijah Williams, who's never played in the NFL before. They were having to rotate guys because the offense just didn't keep them off the field. And I don't know how many NFL analysts every Sunday, the Bill Cowers, the Nate Burlesons, what do they always say, you know? Oh, you want to keep that offense on the, you know, on the sideline. Well, the Vikings haven't done that at all in the first two games, which makes it even harder. I mean, like, you know, Dallas Turner, I didn't think had a great game. He had a very impressive sack and another pressure. But also, like, you're asking a guy who is just developing as a player, hey, go set the edge for play after play after play after play. Well, you're going to eventually get beat. And we've seen that in years past. It's one of my gripes with KOC's offense. And I think it's always been this way, that they've always been on the wrong side of time of possession. But in this case, when they couldn't get anything going, then you really felt that. And I also think that schematically in general, the scheme is built to have Harrison Smith basically be a defensive coordinator on the field. When he's not out there, they can't do the same stuff. Also, I saw a stat today. Josh Metellus last year played in a traditional safety spot last season 12% of the time. He's had to do that 64% of the time so far this year. Like, that's not ideal. That doesn't allow him to be in the box.
So let me jump in on that, because that is such an important point. And I get that. I mean, they had what we thought was a very impressive offseason. It may still turn out to be a very impressive offseason. But is that an area where they made a mistake in knowing they were one injury away from Metellus playing this traditional role and not getting somebody else can play a fair amount so he can use Metellus and really play to his strengths?
Yeah, you know, that was something that we talked about a little bit of, like, do they bring back Cam Bynum? Do they go and get one of those other veteran safeties? But, you know, I think that they had planned on it being Harrison Smith and Theo Jackson back there and Josh Metellus kind of, you know, moving back and forth in different spots. And, you know, I think Jackson's been fine over these first 2 weeks. He hasn't got three picks or anything. He's definitely the best tackler on the field the other night and kind of saved their butt several times when Bijan Robinson broke through. I think Jackson's a really good player and can sort of develop into a Cam Bynum. But not having Harrison Smith, there's just no replacing it. There's no replacing his intelligence. There's no replacing all the things you can do with him, the playmaking, the tackling. I mean, I know he's old, but he still was graded last year as one of the better tacklers in the NFL. I think that would have helped them a lot over these last two games. But also, I don't think you can actually be too upset about the defense. I mean, if you told me they had these two defensive performances, you know, I'd say, well, that's – and the players they're missing, I'd say that's about as good as you can do under the circumstances.
Well, let's get to the other side, because I think there are plenty of people who are upset and for legitimate reasons, and you study this every day. So let's talk about the offense, KOC's approach, J.J. McCarthy, Carson Wentz, and then if Matthew Coller has no choice and he has to pick one guy over the other, is he taking Jefferson or is he taking Chase? All this with Mr. Purple Insider when we come back on CCO. Back with Coller. For all of the obvious reasons, Kevin O'Connell has received a great deal of praise in town and nationally, in particular for his offense. But I feel like the two of us, and then when I talk on Mondays with Chip, that whenever this offense goes sideways, one of the topics that comes back has been highlighted this week, and I'm just baffled by it, that when they are facing games, when they're facing either a great defense or their offensive line just isn't getting it done, I don't get why in this enormous playbook of his, Matthew, he does not feature the shorter, quick hitters. And you've got the data available to him. It's multiple years when he's got these intricate routes, and I listen. You got Justin Jefferson, you got Jordan Addison, now you got Thielen back. I'm not saying it's just check down Charlie, but when your offensive line is getting manhandled and you're staying with that core, I just don't understand.
Well, so I think that there's a lot of layers to that one. Starting with, you know, when Kirk was the quarterback, by the numbers, he was one of the better short passing quarterbacks in the league with KOC. So I really think that it is quarterback related first, because last year we know Sam Darnold really loved him some Sam Darnold downfield.
As he should have. Yeah, and he was very good at it.
And they leaned into that, as they should have, because that's how they won 14 games. I saw a crazy stat today that J.J. McCarthy threw one pass completion in under 2.5 seconds the other night. I think that's a J.J. McCarthy stat. I think when you go back and look at the tape, you see some plays, and I'm not saying it was a good game for KOC or the offensive line or the receivers or anybody. Nobody had a good game. But there's no playbook that doesn't have any throws for 2.5 seconds or less. And I think that what the biggest issue for J.J. McCarthy is that things are moving real quick out there. And what Raheem Morris understood, and you know what's crazy is sometimes we can also say the other team did a good job. They did a great job of actually using a lot of deception at the line of scrimmage, mixing things up for him, not making it easy for where he was supposed to go with the reads. And Wes Phillips told us this week about the quick game. You have to be in the middle of your throw sometimes before the guy breaks out as a wide receiver, and there's a lot of anticipation involved in the quick game. That's why Drew Brees was so good at it. That's why Kirk was good at it, mm-hmm. because he was an anticipation-type thrower, and that's not something that J.J. McCarthy seems comfortable with or ready to do at NFL speed, especially when the defense is getting after him. And I think that once he got hit a couple of times in the game, and there's actually data to show which quarterbacks are most impacted by being hit. And I would guess that a quarterback in his second start was pretty well impacted by that, which kind of just goes back to the whole thing. We just go round and round with this, but at the end of the day, I think the quarterback is just a young kid who didn't know how to handle that situation.
Your answer, which was very good, adds to the utter nonsense that some people were offering up this week, because he has played, four good series, and the other series has been a massive struggle, and they were then suggesting this nebulous group, well, this is KOC, they're talking about this ankle, but really they want him to sit on the sidelines, watch and observe, and he'll improve that way. Hell no. They need him to go through the trial by fire, seeing the reps. It's one thing in Mankato. It's one thing in a preseason game. It's one thing in a scrimmage against the Patriots. But the number one way he's going to get better, Matt, is rep after rep after rep. So this idea that this is – they've all faked this so he can sit on the sidelines and learn more. Sure, he learns plenty in practice and the one-on-one meetings with KOC and Wes Phillips and Josh McCown, but when he's learning the most is playing, and I don't buy that this helps him by sitting out.
No, I mean, and also you go and watch the play. You could pretty clearly see where he was hurt. The broadcast showed him getting the ankle taped. I mean, you could take the tinfoil hat off, but here's
it was all part of the plan, Matthew. You just don't realize it. All part of it.
Here's what I will say, though, because I did talk to somebody this week about this particular type of injury, and I'm not a doctor, and I didn't meet with Tyler Williams, but I'm just saying that this is something that he could quite possibly come back to next week and play. We've seen quarterbacks play with this type of injury a lot over the years within 1 week, and I think if he ends up sitting on the bench over multiple weeks, then it's probably not because the ankle is sore. I think if you're the Vikings, the thing is that you have to do is you got to win games, because this is not a rebuild year. It's not a young team that's just trying to figure itself out and where it's going. It's a veteran team full of star players that has to win. And if Carson Wentz goes out there this week and throws for 350 and four touchdowns, I promise you won't see J.J. McCarthy against the Pittsburgh Steelers in Dublin. If it's an average game, they barely escape with a 17-14 win, then there might be a good chance that, you know, they just go back to the original plan. But I do think there is a world where, you know, they have to evaluate this for who gives them the best chance to win, because that's what they did this offseason with all the money that they spent to build up this roster.
You are required to pick one or the other in assembling your roster as a general manager, and the assignment tells you you have to pick a wide receiver first, and you have first selection. This isn't fantasy football. This is real football. Jefferson or Chase, and why?
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Montana or Young here when we come to this, or Moss or Carter. I mean, it's probably by the slightest nose, Justin Jefferson. They are different types of wide receivers. The reason I would go Jefferson is because the downfield stuff, contested catches, he is as good as I've ever seen. He is, Julio Jones, Megatron, those guys were bigger, but Justin's just as good at it for bringing in the football whenever he's got a 50-50 chance. I think Chase is a little more of a catch-and-run type of guy than Justin is, but you're talking about 1 and 1B in the NFL. I think I would probably just lean ever so slightly Justin. The only thing that is the difference, though, is that you can't take Chase out of a game because they'll just throw him screens and have him run for 50 yards. We've never really seen anyone do that with Justin.
No.
I don't think that he is special after the catch. I think he is much more special when the ball's in the air, go up and get it.
All right, let's switch over to the Lynx because you know this team extraordinarily well. They have pulled off the rarity, at least this year in the playoffs, and ended up requiring a 17-point comeback over the Valkyrie, but they win. Whereas I watched a decent amount of last night's game with Vegas and Seattle, and this team, who had won 17 straight games late in the year, they win by one, right? So are they still the team with the best chance to oust the Lynx?
I think that there's two teams that would probably scare you, though. I mean, you know, at this point, though, because Indiana still has some really good players, I think we've seen there. But probably the Aces, because they have the best player in the world, and that is like Nafisa Collier had an MVP season. She's unbelievable.
Whoa.
Look, I mean, Asia Wilson has already put her name for the best player, I mean, one of the best players of all time. She's like in that Maya Moore category. That's no disrespect to Nafisa Collier.
Sounded
Asia
like
Wilson.
It. Dave,
Asia Wilson,
Dave, did that sound disrespectful to you?
Yep.
Cheryl's calling in right now.
Cheryl, yes.
Yeah, no.
She handles
criticism
very well, too, so that'll be fine.
That's fair. I don't think Asia needed the defensive MVP this year, but anyway, you know, when you're playing the
I saw
best,
those comments.
When you're playing the best player in the world, that's
yep.
always scary. But I also think best player in the world, there's a conversation for Alyssa Thomas in Phoenix, too. New York has just not been the same team this year. They've been all banged up. There's something off with their chemistry. Sabrina Ionescu has not been the same. If I'm a Lynx fan tonight, I kind of want New York to win. I know they beat them last year, but I think Phoenix is actually the stronger team because they're now at full health, and New York is just a little discombobulated. So I think you'd rather face kind of a wounded Liberty team than a full-strength Alyssa Thomas Phoenix Mercury team.
Dave puts out a headline after these conversations, puts it on Twitter. I think the headline, Dave, right now is Matt Collar says Nafisa Collier is one of the 75 best players in the game.
Yeah, scrap heap player at best.
Yeah, I mean, utility, you know.
Maybe she should try something else.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm with you on Asia Wilson. She's the best player. You're 100% right. The Lynx are just so damn deep right now, though, man. I mean,
yep.
They have so many options, and it's crazy that they're this deep and they had back-to-back high draft choices and neither's on the team. Now, obviously, Diamond Miller was used to get Carrington, but the idea that you're going to do this combination of youth and veteran, they didn't. But if you're a couple good calls away from winning the title last year and you're the clear-cut best team in the league so far, it's hard to complain about the approach, to say the least. All right, so pay Joe Nelson his money and let's go. Come on.
It wasn't even a good round, man.
Oh.
Pay me back.
Yeah, that doesn't count. I mean, it's dollar bills. All right, be well, sir, and I'll check out your stuff all weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Chad. Appreciate it.
He is outstanding, Matthew Collar. Let's jump in, Farm Aid. Okay, let's do this. Two things, Dave. The best multi-act show of your life. And as we said when we previewed this starting the show, this could be, as we said, Prince open for the Rolling Stones. It could be someone who at the time was relatively anonymous and they blew your doors off and then you also went there because you loved the main act. Or it could just be two heavyweights that combined together. Not one you watched. It doesn't count if you watched Live 8. That was pretty good. Okay? Doesn't count if you've watched Farm Aid. Who is the best one you've witnessed with your own eyes and ears And if you had two tickets, 0 to 10, what is your interest in this Farm Aid lineup, which is tomorrow at Huntington Bank? And they listed the times. There's no way those times will stay accurate. So I'm seeing Willie on the stage at about 1, right? They're listing him, what was it, 11:02, I think?
Yes.
What realistically is the best time? They're going to be at least an hour plus late with show after show after show.
If you get to Willie by midnight, that would be a win.
It's not going to happen, right?
Likely not.
Not long sets, and they do have built-in cushion. But, and plus with the traffic, if some of the acts are trying to get to Huntington Bank, good luck. They might just go to Sally's. Although I was around somebody younger the other day. It's always been Sally's to me. You know what it is with the younger set now? Sal's.
Well, whatever it is, it's not the old Sally's.
Yeah, looked at me like, who are you?
Yeah.
What planet are you from?
It's corporate Sally's.
I'm like,
now.
Come on, I've been to Sally's a bunch. Fake ID, real ID. Come on. Sal's now.
I had a friend who got busted with the fake ID trying to get into sales. Didn't take it.
Side topic, 651-461-9226. Where did you get your fake ID? I went down to the U senior year of high school, heading to Fort Lauderdale to stay at my father's place, 30 minutes off the water. And then my buddy, his grandparents were down there. We drove their Eldorado with the license plate Leon and Bertha. Oh, yeah, we had chicks just coming up to us all the time. You could go down there for international studies at the U of M. You didn't even have to go to the U of M. You just went down there and said, yeah, whatever my name is, this is where I want to study. So they list like Portugal or, you know, Iceland. And then you just give me your birthday. It was a little big, okay? It wasn't exactly the same size as a driver's license. You know, in Fort Lauderdale in 1983, they really weren't trying that hard. All right, we've given you three, right? Best multi-act. If you had two tickets, your interest and excitement in Farm Aid, and where did you get your fake ID? Calls work also. 651-461-9226.